Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases tuition-free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
Card Nation, this is Attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.
Keep it locked on Stockton Mortgage Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Here's Dan and Mike.
And this segment is brought to you by Delta Dental of Kentucky. We believe everyone deserves a healthy and happy smile. Enrolling in a dental or vision plan with us is easy. Call 1-800-955-2030. That's 1-800-955-2030. Or visit kentucky.deltadental.com. And yes, we are pleased to have join us again Jack Givens on the Kim Crawford Wine Celebrity Hotline. Goose, how are you, my man?
Hey, guys. I'm doing great. How are you all doing?
Good. Are you snowed in?
Well, no. I mean, we got a pretty good amount of snow, probably as you did there, but the roads have been cleared, and, you know, I was able to get up and get to the office this morning, so I'm sitting at my desk looking forward to spending a few minutes with you all.
Well, we are certainly appreciated. I know this has got some questions for you, but we want to talk about Joe B. And Joe B was so important for many, many reasons, Jack. And, you know, he was brought in there, I was told, to integrate the basketball program. And he had guys, African-American players, come through the locker room when we were there, but finally signed Tom Payne. And then Reggie Warford followed, and Dwayne Casey and Larry Johnson. But the real deal for Kentucky basketball, the thing that I think changed everything, was the signing of you and James Lee from Lexington. How about your thoughts on that?
I agree with you. You know, if you are a Kentucky high school basketball expert, and really you don't need to be an expert to know that there were a bunch of really, really good players, black players, who came through and played basketball in the Lexington area. I mean, you think about some of those days back at the old Dunbar High School and the old Douglas High School, where they were kind of in the hood. They were the schools that most African Americans went to at that time. I'm talking about back even before I came through. A bunch of those guys who I think were good enough to play at the University of Kentucky were not even considered. So Kentucky basketball in Lexington was not for the African-American community, it was just not something that people thought about. I mean, they never considered going to or supporting the University of Kentucky basketball program, because so many guys who were good enough didn't even get an opportunity, didn't get considered. So getting into the Lexington area was a huge, huge success for Coach Hall. And, of course, James and I played at a time when high school basketball was probably at its pinnacle throughout the state. I mean, not just in Lexington, but if you think about the basketball in Louisville and how many great, great players were there, I don't think you really grow the program until you start getting into the areas that get the most attention when it comes to African-American high school basketball. And once Coach Hall was able to get James and I in there, that kind of opened up the state. You go to Louisville and you start getting the Winston Bennetts and those kind of players to consider and to come to the University of Kentucky. Those were big days. And that's when the program took some huge steps. And Coach Hall was pretty much responsible for that.
Jack, because of the factors that you just mentioned, I understand there wasn't complete support in your community for you and James to go to the university.
Far from it. You know, I mean, James' dad was the pastor at the church I went to. And it just so happened that a bunch of those former players who had been overlooked by the university went to church with us. The guys that we looked up to, I mean, I'm talking about guys who were legends in high school basketball back when Dunbar was winning state championships. And, you know, we saw those guys every day. And then when we got out to the communities and played in the parks and the dirt bowl and Charles Young Center and other places like that, where we had to go against those guys every day. You know, you knew it was just one of those things that, because we were hearing it from them, man, you don't want to go there. Look what happened to Tom Payne. Look what, you know, they don't appreciate black people at the University of Kentucky when it comes to basketball. So we had, James and I had to hear that a lot of times every day, and especially in the summer when we played at the Dirt Bowl and those kind of places. So, yeah, a lot of people. My mother was one, as a matter of fact, who I had to convince that, Mom, I'm going to be all right, I think, at the university. You know, so I had that very, very close and personal when it came to making the decisions, as did James, man. He heard it from a lot of people as well. So I thought it was really important, and Coach Hall and his staff put a lot of time into James and I to try to convince us that the University of Kentucky was where we needed to be.
Well, Jack, tell us your thoughts on Joe B, not only as a coach, but as a person. I mean, you know, you had to, in that recruiting process you talked about, you had to have an awful good feel for the man himself, and then you played for him.
Well, yeah, I mean, I did. I mean, he was recruiting. He was a nice guy and talked really favorable to us about playing for him and what it was going to be like. And then those first couple of months of trying to, you know, understand Coach Hall, I thought, man, who is this guy? This is not the guy who recruited me. I'm not hearing that nice stuff that he was saying to me when he was coming into Bryan Station, and he would show up at our games, and you know, he would always had the big smile on his face. I thought, man, it would be nice to just see a smile, man, just from this guy, let alone hearing all this stuff that I had no clue I was going to have to go through. But you guys know, I'm not telling you anything that you don't know. Coaches back in those days, it's different now, but coaches back in those days, they did not go out of their way to make you like them. As a matter of fact, you know, a lot of them didn't want you to like them. They wanted you to come to work every day, and they felt like if you liked them, you wouldn't bring it like you do if you're trying to, you know, if he's treating you different and difficult and being tough with you. And you know, it's a little now. Coaches kind of you know, just kind of pat the guys on their back and try in a nice way to convince them that you have to play. I mean, we had it different. So I had to adjust to a whole new Coach Hall. And frankly, at that time, I didn't like him very much playing for him. There were a lot of days that he wasn't very, very pleasant to us. But that was just a sign of the times. I'm really glad I got to know him a whole lot better after my playing days were over, and really probably 10, 15 years after I played for Coach Hall, I kind of started having a whole different relationship with him. I mean, it was one day he called me, and he had gotten into broadcasting games, and he called me up and he said, Hey, I need to have lunch with you. Can you meet me for lunch? And I said, sure, coach, anytime, you know. Just so I got there, and all he wanted to talk about, because I had been broadcasting games for a number of years by that time, by the time he finished coaching and then got into broadcasting some. And he had to ask me, what do you do to prepare for games? I mean, how do you get ready? He said, this broadcasting is a whole lot tougher than I ever thought it would be. And, you know, and both of you have been into that. So, you know, it's not something that comes very easily. I mean, it takes a lot of adjustments. And the advice I gave him, I said, Coach, the way I approach broadcasting, I said, you know, if I think about the cameras being on and I'm talking to thousands of people and trying to explain this stuff to a thousand people, I said, Coach, I never would be able to broadcast a game. I told him, I said, man, you just need to think about one guy or one, two or three people, and you're explaining basketball to those two or three people. And if you do it that way and not think about how big it is, you're going to be able to be successful because that's the way you need to approach it. So he listened to me, and a few weeks later, he said, man, it's a whole lot different. Thank you so much. So for the first time, we were kind of talking as peers as opposed to a coach-player relationship, and that's when our friendship, and I'm saying a friendship, not relationship, but a real friendship, that's when it started to develop and it took off at that time.
Jack, that's amazing that you would bring that up because I feel the exact same way about Coach Rupp. I tell people if my relationship with Coach Rupp had ended with my eligibility, I wouldn't think nearly as much of him as exactly. I do. And it's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, does your book have a title yet?
Technically, the working title right now is They Call Him Goose. Is the working title. Now, we are throwing some other things around, and it may end up being something totally different. But that's what the title is. We have a little time before it's coming out. We finally pretty much finished the book. We are going through pictures and stories to see exactly what we want to keep, what we want to maybe change, stuff we might need to add. So we're going through the editing part of it right now, which is really fun. But man, looking at the pictures and getting the captions of even back in the days when I was living in the housing project in Lexington, where we grew up with my nine siblings, it's coming along really well, but right now it's the working title is they call him Goose.
Well, I Doug was nice enough to send me a manuscript, uh-huh. And I'm about halfway through it. And when the book comes out, you have to come back and because it is unbelievable. I'm enjoying it so much. You know, I know Goose the basketball player. I don't know Jackie Lamont the man until I read your book. Now, I want you to tell one story that you didn't know until recently, and that is why do they call you Goose?
Well, you know, I always thought, you know, Goose was from Goose who played with the Harlem Globetrotters. You'll know him. And the guys started calling me Goose because that's the only Goose I really knew. But the actual story is, and I remembered it immediately after Ted Hunley, who I played with at Bryan Station, and Ted gets a lot of pleasure out of correcting me any chance he can. but he said, no, man, I started calling you Goose back when we went, Coach Barlow, who was a high school coach at Bryan Station, Coach Barlow took us to see a Kentucky Colonels game. And the guy you played with by the name of Goose Wiggin, he said, he looked just like you and you looked just like him. And you started to play like him after we went to that game. He said, so that's why I started calling you Goose. And you know, of course, all the guys on the team and especially the ones who went to the game with us started calling me that right after it. So that was really it was really good to get some clarification on that and to be able to really tell the correct story about how all that started.
Well, Jack, in your book, I know you talk about that magical year, 1978 NCAA championship. But help me with this. Joe B. caught a lot of crap about you guys were just soldiers marching forward. You weren't human. You didn't have feelings. And I thought that was very unfair. But you have to know Joe B. to understand that, correct? Give me your thoughts on that magical year and how Joe dealt with it in the mindset that he had you guys in.
You know, it was really interesting, and that's one of the many reasons I appreciate Coach Hall and some of the sacrifices, behind-the-scenes sacrifices he made for us. You know, when you have a team of seniors, and we had Rick and Mike Phillips and James Lee and myself, so the nucleus were seniors. We went to the final game with Grebe and Guyette and Mike Flynn and all of those guys back when I was a freshman. We went to the finals, and we lost to UCLA in that game. We had won the NIT as sophomores, and, man, our best team was my junior year when we lost to Carolina in the finals of the East region. We had Larry Johnson at the point guard, and man, we had some players, Rick and Mike and James and myself and Marion Haskins. And, you know, we had a really, really good team. And we lost to Carolina and Phil Ford and Dean Smith and the four corner offense and all of that kind of stuff they ran against us. We had a meeting as soon as we got back to Lexington, and Rick probably took over and said, man, we're not doing anything this summer except staying in the gym. If you're going home, go now, get it over with, but come back and we're landed on the line. So that attitude came from the players. It was not started by Coach Hall. It wasn't mandated by Coach Hall. We wanted to get back to the Final Four, and we knew we were good enough that if we did, we could win it all. And there was certain stuff. I mean, man, as a freshman, we played in San Diego, and we went to the beach, and we went to the zoo, and we did everything you could possibly do in San Diego outside of basketball. And we had a great time. I mean, we really did, but we came in second, we didn't win it. So that as a senior, we said, man, we're not doing anything but focusing on basketball. And Coach Hall took all of the flack that went with that, man. The national media pounded us. We were robots. We didn't have any fun. And as you say, Mike, everything negative they could say, but they directed it at Coach Hall, and he accepted it. And he kind of shielded us, kept us away from all the hoopla that goes along with being number one, all of that. He took all of that, the blame for all of that, which was, like I say, one of those reasons why I really appreciated him even more later in life.
Jack, you mentioned earlier that your mother really wasn't excited about you going to UK. Now, I know from reading the manuscript, your mother never saw you play in high school. Is that right?
She never went to a game. She was a nervous wreck, man. And she thought for sure I was going to get hurt. And you know, I mean, my 10th grade year when I first started playing, actually in the ninth grade at Dunbar High School, where I went to high school my ninth grade year, she wouldn't sign the permission slip for me to play basketball. So I brought the permission slip, and I brought the permission slip home. I talked to my oldest sister Regina, who did a lot of the raising of me because my mom worked two or three jobs and was not in the house a lot at that time. So I took the permission slip to her, And I said, you need to sign this for me so I can play basketball. So my sister signed the permission slip. My mother knew nothing about it. She knew nothing about it. And then I came home one day in an ambulance because I broke my nose. I mean, I ran into a guy and broke my nose, and so I couldn't go to the hospital until I go to get it fixed, until I went home and got my mother to come with me, and man, she let me have it. What are you doing playing basketball? I did not tell you you could play. She went through all of that. So no, she never saw me play at Bryan Station. She would listen to all the games on the radio, because most of them was on the radio. And if the game got tight, she'd go and she'd do laundry, or she'd clean this or cook that. She listened to every one of them, but she didn't. She didn't go to see me play. We had an agreement, which is pretty funny, when I first started at Bryan Station, because she knew I was going to play anyway, so she didn't try to get in the way. She told me, she said, for every point when I first started, she said, for every point, I'll give you a dollar. Every point you score. Now, you know, this is coming from a woman who, was working at that time as a nurse's aide at Eastern State Hospital, which was a hospital for the mentally handicapped. So of course I started scoring a lot of points. Not that I ever took a dollar from her, but I said, "Mama, just give me a quarter." And then she said, "Okay, I'll give you a quarter." And then I said, "Mama, just give me a dime." So she never gave me anything, but that was her way of showing her support.
Well, before we let you go, Jack, and you've got some great stories, and we are looking forward to your book, but leave us with one thought or one story about you and Joe B and maybe the team that sticks in your mind.
Well, the thing that that I can tell you, and you all know Coach Hall, but the day right after we won the championship, and we had done all the celebrating, we had cut down the nets, they had presented us with our championship watch and with the trophy, and all of the celebration that was going on, and we finally finished all that up. And we were walking back to the locker room, and you know, I was just basking in, hey man, this is over, and we were top on the scoreboard, we beat Duke, so I'm walking back. And out of nowhere, Coach Hall came up to me and he put his arm around me and he said, "So now you see what all that screaming and bitching and that I did towards you, now you see why I did it." And before I could say anything, he left me and walked the other direction, because I don't know what I would have said. But he said, "Now you know why I did that." And he laughed and walked away, and I kind of laughed and went on to the locker room. But that was just kind of his way of saying, thank you for all that you did helping me to win this championship. And that moment, in addition to others, was one of the most special moments that I had with him, especially as a player. Where he, in his own way, he said thank you very much by giving me a hard time as we walked back to the locker room.
Well, Jack, we appreciate your time and your stories. We're looking forward to the book coming out. I think fans will get a real kick out of that in the stories. And of course, now with Joe passing, I think the stories become even more important to the folks who follow the Kentucky Wildcats. And you have a good day. We'll see you.
Thanks,
well, we won't see you for a while because we're on the road. But next home game is a couple Wednesdays from now. I look forward to seeing you then, Goose.
I always look forward to seeing you. Thanks so much for having me on again, Dan. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Goose.
I'll tell you what, he is a real gentleman, because there's a lot of people that come up before the game is and they want to talk or take a picture. He's always, and I've brought grandkids along and other people to have a picture, he turns no one down. He is a fine representative, one of the best representatives of the basketball program.
No question about it. And he's such a gentleman. And like I say, I'm about halfway through his book, and Mike is, it's just unbelievable. Like he said, he grew up in the housing projects there in Lexington, and you know, the journey that he went on. Used to wash dishes. You remember the Little Inn?
Sure.
That was out,
sure,
on Winchester Road. Had the best prime rib when we were going to UK. Had the best prime rib in town. He when he was 13 years old, he started washing dishes there. I mean, it's just where he came from, how he grew up. It's just amazing. And we'll have him, when that book comes out, we'll have him back on, because it's a book that every member of Big Blue Nation is going to want to read.
I've just started my copy of the manuscript, and I'm looking forward to finish it off. The book, kindly sent by Doug Brunk, who's the author, or he is the what would you call that when you write with somebody else, not necessarily an author? What is that?
Well, it's a co-author, but a ghostwriter. Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, that's the one I was looking for. I was looking for. Yeah. So,
all right. Well, when we come back, we have to talk about the NFL playoffs and what that's going to look like going forward. This is a reminder that this segment of Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt has been brought to you by Delta Dental of Kentucky.
You're locked on Stockton Mortgage Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Dan and Mike.
There you go, Mr. Pratt.
I'm having some Motown electronical failures here. Yes, but process got
me straightened out. I don't know what you were doing with your iPhone, because I was getting seasick watching you. It was up and down. I think I had shots of the ceiling and shots of the floor.
Well, I told you my iPad's going out. I got a new one. I have to get it programmed, but it's a piece of garbage now. It's 10 years. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Hey, Vision, everybody has one. That epic cross-country road trip, your dream wedding, that kitchen renovation for churning out next level entrees, and the folks at Stockton Mortgage can help you achieve your vision. If you're a homeowner, then you may have heard that home values are on the rise in most areas. Take advantage of the historically low rates to refinance your home mortgage to get cash out and finance your dreams. Give the folks over at Stockton Mortgage a call today, or get started by going online at Stockton.com. NMLS 8259, NMLS Consumer Access .org, equal housing lender.
Well, your wishes are going to be met. We're going to talk a little NFL football playoffs, but first of all, I will have to ask Process, can you tell us how we did in the games up to tonight's game?
Give me a half sec. I will go retrieve the paper. I know we did relatively well, though. Give me a sec.
Okay. How about?
I think I was 5-0.
Oh, really? You keep track of that stuff? What did you already cash your money, cash your check?
No, I should have gone across the bridge. Should have.
Well, I'll tell you what. That there was some bad football, but then there were some terrific games, too. I mean, some fun games to watch.
Did you get a chance to watch any games on Saturday?
Not till we got home. That's right. It was
was the bingo game already underway when you got home?
It was, yeah. It was an interesting ball game.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. I'm excited about the future. I don't know if the Bengals can beat Tennessee in Nashville, Joe Burrow and Chase, they're unbelievable. He doesn't make any mistakes, Mike. Their defense might not be good enough to win another playoff game, but I really enjoyed it. And the thing I enjoyed most, I don't know if you saw this story or not, but Coach Taylor, the Bengals coach, he was very appreciative after the game that he had been given that third year. Because, you know, now in the NFL, you know, you finish dead last in your division like the Bengals have the last 2 years. You know, you're looking for a new job. You're out on the street. And he was so appreciative and thankful to the ownership of the Bengals that they let him have this third year. And, of course, he goes from worst to first and wins the first playoff game in for the Bengals in 31 years. So good for him.
Yeah, I hate to say it because, you know, I'm a long, long Pumpkinhead fan. But I think the Bengals have finally got it going in the right direction. And my boys are struggling. I don't know what's going to happen up there. But you go from making the playoffs last year to not making him this year and finishing, as you said, dead last. There's going to be some changes up there. There are going to be some interesting changes.
Did you see what Coach Taylor, the Bengals coach, did on the way home after the game Saturday?
No.
He had on his drive from his home to the stadium, going back and forth after games and stuff, he noticed that there was this tavern in Cincinnati. I think it was called the Mount Lookout Tavern. He had never been in there, but he had driven past it a bunch of times and always saw that it was packed with Bengals fans. So on his way home after the game, he takes a commemorative ball and walks unannounced, walks into the bar and presents them with this commemorative ball for winning the playoff game. I thought that was a great story.
That's pretty cool. That's what you call connecting with your fan base, right?
Exactly.
That's what it takes. Yeah, college coaches have done that for years. But the pro guys really haven't done that. And now I see them starting to do that also, which is terrific.
Yeah, yeah.
Bobby, what do you got, brother?
So, Dan, you did not go 5-0. You missed one game. Sorry.
Which one did I lose?
New England.
I didn't pick New England, did I?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
As did Mike. So, you went 4-1. Mike and I both went 3-2.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, there you go.
So, do we all have the Rams tonight?
No, you're the only one with the Rams. Me and Mike both picked Arizona.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, how about your Eagles, man?
Hey, that's all right.
Oh, man.
I didn't expect them to win. I didn't expect anything. I was like, at least cover. They couldn't do that either. But you know what? It's okay.
Well, hey, talking about the Eagles, is your quarterback the long-term answer there?
No, but I'll take him for one more year because he's on a nothing contract, and the crop of rookies coming up this year, at least from, you know, what they're saying, is pretty garbage. So I'm willing to give him another year and wait till next year when maybe somebody like a Stroud or a Bryce Young is available.
Well, that was the question I was going to ask also, yes, his feelings on that. But what about your coach, man? I mean, in the NFL, if you lose, look that bad, even though you made the playoffs, you might get fired.
That's only year one. He'll get another year.
Year one, they fire guys left and right with year one.
They go like, 3-13. I mean, do you make the playoffs in year one, you get to stick around.
Well, what do you think Jerry Jones is thinking about today?
He's great.
I saw a quote this morning. He said that was the most disappointing loss he's had as the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. What did you think of that? Did you see the last play, Mike, when they ran the quarterback sneak and didn't have enough time?
Yeah, I saw
what
that.
What was your take on that?
Not good.
No, and the officiating was 100% right. The rule is an official has to spot the football in between plays, and the center runs up there and starts marking the ball. What's he thinking about? And they don't get the snap off on time. I thought it was first of all, they only had 14 penalties. So, don't blame anybody but yourself for losing that football game. But the call at the end of the game was correct as far as the officials were concerned. And then Prescott says he supported the fans for throwing beer bottles on the field. I thought that was really, really low down.
Well, I agree with you, but I have to add one more thing. You talk when he scrambled out of the pocket for the last play for Dallas, He did not veer to the sidelines. He had to know that time was short. If he got out of bounds, and he could have gotten out of bounds, I think he headed down the middle, could have veered quickly to the sidelines and gotten out versus staying in. So what if he never got out? They'd have the ball just about where they ended up with the ball, okay? But if he gets out, he buys time for one last Hail Mary.
Yeah, one last throw to the end zone.
Yeah, I just wonder what he was thinking.
The Niners did drape the sidelines with two or three players on each sideline, and the middle was wide open. It's a stupid play, but that's why he didn't run to the sideline. They would have kept him out. They would have bounced him out.
I don't buy that at all. I think he could have gotten out of bounds.
All I know is they had 14 penalties, over 100 yards of penalties. So, you know, they've got nobody to blame but themselves. But I was pulling for the 49ers. I was just pulling for a good game, because the only two decent games over the weekend were the Cincinnati game and that game.
Yep.
The other three were just complete blowouts.
Well, Process, I'll throw this out for your consideration in ASU too. Okay, you know the seconds on the clock. The middle opens up because how they're playing, okay? Why don't you just throw the ball over everybody's head in the end zone? Just crank it up. Make it look like a pass before you cross the line of scrimmage, and then you stop the clock, and you still got some life. Why do you have to run it?
Oh, I agree. It's the problem. I said it on Drew's show, too. It's always about who's the smartest guy in the room, okay? And on that play, Dak Prescott and Mike McCarthy thought they were the smartest guys in the room, and you saw what happened to them. I mean, it's just – it's one of the – because they said, oh, we practiced it and we planned for this to happen just like this. If that's your plan, then maybe you should think of maybe a different plan. That's a horrible idea to run a draw with 14 seconds left with no time. And – at best, at absolute best, if you want to even try to justify the draw, you run 15 yards max. You do not try to go 25 yards down the field and try to set the ball with that kind of time. There's no way.
Yeah, I would agree. I would have liked to see him stop just when he broke the middle before he crosses the line of scrimmage. Crank it down over the head of one of your guys that are running a route. Just crank it out, and you stop the clock, and then you got life. I don't know. I just thought it was I thought Prescott just missed it mentally on that whole play.
Well, and then to go into the post game and praise the Cowboy fans for throwing beer bottles on the field. That was so Bush League.
Yeah. I stupid. It was stupid to say that.
I don't get that at all. Bobby, have the lines come out? I know he can't have a line on the Tampa Bay game because we don't even know who they're playing yet. But have the lines come out on the other three games?
I believe, as I pull them up, I believe I remember seeing the 49ers game was within four. But let me
They go to Green Bay, correct?
Yes.
Yes. So the lines for next. Okay, so here we go. Okay, I got. Give me a sec. Hang on a sec. You got Vamp for a sec.
All right. Well,
I like Green Bay. I'm still a Green Bay guy.
Let me ask you this. It does somewhat have to do with the NFL.
I do have them.
Mike, do you know what a bralette is?
No, I never heard of it.
Bobby, do you know what a bralette is?
I do not.
Well, evidently, there's a young lady by the name of Olivia. I believe her last name is pronounced Culpo. And she is a former Miss USA. And she was on her way walking down the concourse. And evidently, you can now walk around in your underwear if you call it a bralette instead of a bra. And she was about to get on the airplane, American Airlines. She was about to get on the airplane. She was going, I think, Cancun. And American Airlines said, I'm sorry, miss, but you're going to have to cover up to get on the airplane. So she was traveling with her boyfriend, and her boyfriend had on a sweatshirt and a T-shirt. So he took his sweatshirt off, gave it to her so she could cover up to get on the airline. And then they made their way to Mexico. You know who her boyfriend is?
I have no clue.
See, do I you, cheated, Bobby? Because I was Googling what it was. Yes, I do.
Christian McCaffrey.
Yep.
Oh, really?
Christian McCaffrey is her boyfriend, and he had to take off his sweatshirt and give it to this young lady so that American Airlines would let her on. I didn't know what it was either, but when I was reading the story, I went to my my source that is all thing fashion, and that's Sherry, and she explained. But it looked to me like she was walking down the concourse in her underwear. But American Airlines must have felt the same way.
And then
way.
She put out a picture of Christian McCaffrey with his arms in his shirt because he's cold on the plane without a sweatshirt.
And I guess that got a lot of publicity in Denver because of the connection with McCaffrey. But yeah. I didn't see anything about that this morning. I missed that. That's a good – was that a tidbit?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a tidbit.
Okay.
That was a tidbit.
Well, I got a
All right, Bobby, what are the lines?
All right, the lines are the Cincinnati versus Tennessee is currently Tennessee minus 3.5. You have
Wow.
Green Bay versus San Francisco, Green Bay minus 5.5. And Kansas City versus Buffalo is Kansas City minus 2.5.
That Kansas City Buffalo game, I'm really looking forward to that because those two quarterbacks on their best days, they are unbelievable. Josh Allen against New England was 21 of 25 for 308 yards and 5 touchdowns. Kansas City, their quarterback was 30 for 39, 404 yards, and 5 touchdowns. I might have to pick the over in that one.
That game is in Kansas City?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so the weather won't be like zero at game time.
I don't know. Well, it's pretty cold out there.
Yeah, you never
well,
you're
know. You're going to get some wind because it's so flat, but I don't think that game, man, I don't know what the what the total, the bottom line temperature, okay, with the wind and everything else in Buffalo. But Kansas City can get very windy. I think that might be a factor.
Yeah, yeah, it can get really windy, and it can get cold. It was cold there last night. They were all bundled up pretty well. But if both of those quarterbacks are at their best, that's going to be a fun game to watch.
All right, a tidbit for you, Mr. Issel.
Okay.
I know you understand Ken-Pom because you call it pom-pom.
Yeah. No, ping-pong.
Ping-pong. Pardon me. Ping-pong. Okay. UK's offensive efficiency, number 4 in Ken-Pom. Okay?
In the whole country?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, over the next 2 weeks, they will play against Auburn and Kansas, who are number 7 and number 9 in the Ken-Pom.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice.
And in between there, they're sandwiched with a couple trap games maybe, but games that you could overlook, whatever you want to call it, at Texas A&M and Mississippi State at home. Now, Mississippi State, they're going to be a tough out. I mean, that guard, Molinar, is really a quality player. At least you have him at home. But when you're facing number 7 and number 9 in the next 2 weeks, you got your work cut out for you.
You sure do. You sure do. And I'm really looking forward to that Kansas trip. That'll be a lot of fun. I've never been there, and
you got
I understand
the ticket in the back pocket.
Yeah, I might have a decent ticket, so I'm really looking forward to that game.
Well, staying with basketball, we talked about Northwestern over Michigan State. But how about Oregon? Have you followed what they did?
Well, I know they beat UCLA.
And they beat SC. Okay, both Ooh, top 10 teams.
And both in Los Angeles.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's a nice trip.
Oregon had a lot of COVID issues and had some games postponed and whatnot. But, man, they went into L.A., which has always been a difficult trip for the teams north of California. And they beat them both. Man, that was amazing.
I've never been to the arena at Southern Cal. I've been to Pauley a number of times. Have you been to their gym?
They used to play in the sports center, okay?
Yeah.
And now they have their place on campus, and no, I haven't. But, I the Pauley is still the one. When you go in there, of course, they didn't have any fans at the game at Pauley.
That would makes imagine, it a little easier.
Yeah, yeah, and I would imagine that was the same for the SC game. But boy, college basketball, as you said earlier, is really shaking out to be a lot of fun. And it, you don't have to get to the tournament. The regular season is a lot of fun. I mean, yeah. There's people beating people that you wouldn't believe could do it.
Look at Baylor. Yep. Baylor was the number one team in the country. They had 20-some consecutive wins going back to last year, and they got beat twice this past week. So,
and once at home.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know. It's gonna be a lot of fun. College basketball, there's such parity, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if social media or all of the people, you know, building up these good teams, but man, some of them have really laid some eggs here the last couple of weeks.
Well, you need to put your mind to a pencil and paper and pick your top 15 for tomorrow. I would move Auburn to number one. And I would make...
Really?
Yep. I would make Purdue number two and the Zags number three. I don't... You know, of course, I think, unfortunately for Auburn, because of Pearl and his reputation, I think people don't want to put Auburn at number one. Okay?
Yeah.
Let's be honest. There's a hangover from all the NCAA stuff that Pearl's been involved with. But I put them number one. I think they're right now. I don't know whether they'll be number one in April, first weekend in April, but I think they're number one. I think they deserve to be number one right now.
Well, I don't think they will be. I think Gonzaga will be because they hammered BYU.
Yep.
And they started out number one, started out the year number one. And so I think Gonzaga will be number one, and I believe Auburn will be number two.
Well, you always, when you look at the Zags, you always have to say, and this is a conversation about their league and who they play, yada, yada. You don't worry about the Big Ten where Purdue is. I mean, you know that's going to be competitive. You know that they're going to be pushed. You know they're probably going to be beaten in the same way with the SEC right now. So I've got to go with those two teams, and I have great respect for the Zags, and they may win it all. Who knows? But I think right now, Purdue and Auburn, I think are at the top of my list.
Yeah, and there's a great college game on as soon as we get off the air, Mike.
Yep.
Purdue and Illinois. And it's at Illinois.
Yeah, so, we forget about Illinois, don't we? We kind of forget about them.
Yeah, no, you know they're 13-3. They're in the top 25 at number 25, but because of Martin Luther King Jr. Day, there's always a bunch of afternoon NBA games. But that's the one I'm going to be watching as soon as we get off here, Purdue and Illinois.
Well, I want you to watch a team while you're out there, if assuming they play on TV, you get the Pac-12 or whatever TV package you get. Arizona, I want to know more about Arizona. Everybody's excited about Arizona. And I do know they went into Knoxville and got beat by Tennessee. I don't know what that says, but I want you to give me a scouting report on Arizona.
Yeah, well, I do know that this past week, Colorado, which is a decent team, not a great team, but they went down to Arizona and got handed. It was like a 20-point loss. So Arizona might be pretty good.
Well, we'll be back tomorrow here in Louisville. Dan will be back tomorrow from Denver, relaxing with the grandkids who made appearances on my iPad. It looks good. Sherry brought you coffee. Man, you're rolling this morning, aren't you? Jeez.
We're having a good time. Thanks for listening. This has been Sports Talk with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel on ESPN Louisville. Have a great day, everybody.
The cat sat on the mat.
Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases, tuition-free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
Card Nation, this is attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.